T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Hanging out. Mac and Parkin's on the Score. We got Hub Arcus joining us an hour from now. We're waiting for Joe Montana to give us a call. We will, of course, have a Chris Tannehill open that he'll compliment Tanny's open more than he'll compliment any of our questions. It's a tradition unlike any other around these parts, Mac.
Yes, it really is, yeah. And you asked before we went into break, what do I think of? And I gave you my answer. You talked about what you think of when you think of Joe's career, and a ton of texters piled in with searching for Bobby Fischer, which I don't know if you've seen that, but I recently consumed it to freshen up on my Joe Montana, and liked it very, very much. There was a kid actor in that film who I absolutely fell in love with, who was his first picture. He was only 9 years old when the kid shot it. The kid's name is Max Pomerank, and I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he didn't do much afterward. He just kind of fizzled, and don't know what happened to him, but Joe certainly carried on and has been doing some great stuff and is very involved in the local theater. As you pointed out today in our group text, he's always been an advocate of the theater. My heart belongs to the theater, Danny Parkins.
And we'll talk to Joe Montana right now.
Oh, Nelly, how'd y'all get in my room? Well, what do you know? A drink for me?
One of my first cases on the job. 3 kids watched their parents get beaten to death. Every year I call to tell them I haven't forgotten. I'm still looking.
You guys are a unsigned band, and you broke into the radio station to get your demo played on the air?
Rock and roll! Warp speed, Mr. Zulu!
You're gonna scream rock and roll. You're gonna go to jail for that.
There's a saying, Milo. If it's too loud, you're too old.
You all know Joey Zasek. He is, I admit, an important man. His picture is on the cover of the New York Times magazine. He gets the Esquire magazine award for the best-dressed gangster. He is famous.
I make more of a bella figura. That is my nature. But I also want to make a move into legitimate enterprises. I like to get a little pin from the Pope.
Hi, I'm Joe Mantegna. As we face the prospect of war, recession, and the Bud Bowl, let's remember the positive. Saturday Night Live with my guest, Vanilla Ice.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Bill Swirsky, and with me, as always, are the super fans. Which building would you rather have, the Empire State Building or the Sears Tower, Pat?
Sears.
Carl?
Sears' Tower.
Pat?
Sears.
Sears.
Sears. Sears.
Police suspect the involvement of reputed mobster William Fat Tony Williams.
Could we have the money now?
The answer is no.
I'm afraid I must insist. You see, my wife, she has been most vocal on the subject of the pretzel monies. Where's the money? When are you going to get the money? Why aren't you getting the money now? And so on. So please, the money.
An absolute hell of a career and a pleasure to be welcomed by Chicagoan Joe Montana on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Joe, welcome to the McNeil and Parkin Show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I think having my career flash before my ears, you know.
Yeah, what'd you think?
That's great. And, you know, ironically, at about an hour from now, I'm going to be doing another one of the Bear skits with George Wendt and Robert Smigel, who created it. We're doing it for the Sweet Home Chicago thing they're doing on, it's on the 16th. They're going to stream it to help, you know, people like homeless homelessness and stuff in the COVID-19 thing. And so it's kind of ironic that they sent me the script. And so we'll be reliving those guys again. The Swirsky brothers will be back. So that'll be cool.
Never gets old, does it? At least it doesn't for me, Joe.
No, it doesn't get old for me either. No, we're hoping for another year like 85, but what are you going to do? We'll see what we can do.
So we know you're a diehard Cubs fan. Are you a Bears fan in all Chicago teams as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, without question. I mean, my wife had a restaurant out here in Burbank, California for 16 years called Taste Chicago. We just closed it last year. And I had jerseys in there from everybody, from the Bears, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the Cubs, the Sox, you know. So, you don't lose your hometown affiliation regardless of where you live, you know. And that's where I grew up, and Chicago is my hometown, and, yeah, I'm all Chicago.
Who were some guys, you athletes or sports people, you got to know a little bit over the years, Joe, who you established friendships with, who you really enjoy their company?
Well, I mean, I was blessed to have gotten to know Ernie Banks, who was like, you know, I idolized him, you know, and so I got to know him. I threw out the first pitch and sang the seventh inning stretch for the game. Kerry Wood struck out the 20 guys to tie the major league record back then. And that was a huge game. I mean, to this day, it's, you know, one of the Cubs Hall of Fame games. And so I got to know, well, him, Billy Williams. You know, we did the play Bleacher Bums in Chicago back in 1977, which was a play I conceived at the Organic Theater. You know, there was a lot of the Cubs players, you know, at that time that, you know, got to kind of meet and got to know Santo very well. And I'm a good friend of his son, Jeff. Mm-hmm. So, and then Sox players too. I got to know Robin Ventura. He used to come visit the set of Criminal Minds sometimes because he knew one of the directors. So, and I got to know Jordan a bit. So I had a cross-section of different athletes from Chicago that I got to know over the years.
Are you enjoying The Last Dance if you got to know Jordan a bit?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. That's really a special thing. In fact, I even did there was a podcast about it a few weeks ago that I was able to do and comment about it. But, yeah, I got to know Jordan very early on. We were both kind of representing Bigsby and Carruthers, the clothes store out of Chicago back then, you know, and they had these billboards. I don't know if you remember, there was this huge billboard right on the Kennedy Expressway. They had the Worm up there for a while. And then they had, of course they represented Jordan for a long time. And then they had a big picture of Dennis Franz, Dennis Farina, and myself, right there around the Ohio Street exit there. And so we all kind of shared that in common. But when you're an actor, those are your heroes are people not you don't idolize other actors. You idolize people like athletes and writers and musicians and, you know, people from other walks of life.
Right. That's the thing, right? Rock stars want to be athletes. Athletes want to be actors. And you guys all want to do the other job. Any athletes ask you for acting tips? Because plenty of them try to cross over.
Yeah, actually, there was like one good friend of mine who did dabble in some acting, and I got to know him that way, was Lee Mazzilli, who used to play for the Mets and the Yankees. And I'm to this day, I'm still very close friends with Lee. And I've worked with other, you know, people who like Gavin Rosdale from the band Bush, worked with him a little bit on something. He was a wonderful, wonderful guy. And, he was doing some, he did an episode of Criminal Minds, and then I did a little coaching with him on a movie that he did. In terms of the other athletes, acting tips, they do pretty well. Ditka does pretty well without me. He's had a good cross section of commercials and things, and he's fantastic. I love all the stuff he does.
The endorser, yeah, Joe. What is it about the theater experience that actors hold in such high regard versus television or the movies?
Well, you know, it's that personal thing. It's that it'd be like telling a singer, you know, talking to Frank Sinatra and say, what's it like singing in front of like 100,000 people live or walking into a booth and recording a record? It's a whole different experience, you know. So, I mean, they're both enjoyable in their own way. But I don't think anything can duplicate, you know, that live interaction between you and the people. Because this goes back to the Stone Age. I'm sure there were cavemen and women who kind of put on little skits for each other back then. So this, you're talking about something that goes back to the beginning of time in terms of humans interacting with each other and trying to, you know, portray something or amuse somebody by doing something. See, so I just think it's an internal thing that just is, once you've done it and if it registers with you, it you benefit from it.
We're talking to Joe Mantegna here, McNeil and Parkins on the Score. He'll be hosting, co-hosting the National Memorial Day concert May 24th, 7 o'clock Central on PBS with Gary Sinise. And Joe, you mentioned Frank Sinatra, and as I was preparing for you to come on, I was seeing something on social media about, you know, stories from Frank Sinatra's house. How did your and his paths cross? How often, and what was that like?
Well, it actually started with my dear friend Tom Dreesen, you know, another Chicago, who actually was a bat boy for a little while for the Cubs. He, Tom's had a great career as a entertainer and MC for, he opened for Sinatra for like 11 years as a comic. He invited me one year, many years ago, to the Frank Sinatra Celebrity Golf Tournament. So I hadn't played golf for a long time. My father was an avid golfer, but I hadn't, I just have to see something because my wife is not answering the front door and I hate to interrupt this thing. Are you getting that?
Oh, it's Postmates for Stephanie.
It's the food. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
Got it. You know what? Don't worry about it.
This fits in with the show because what it is they're delivering a bunch of ribs and stuff for me to eat on camera when we do that skit of the Bears. And so because of this social distancing and stuff, the delivery guy's at the door from Postmates with the bags, and my wife is trying to make it happen to get the guy in without, you know, infecting the neighborhood, I guess. I don't know. We're in some crazy times here. But anyway, that's the thing with Tom Dreesen got me involved. I hadn't played golf in a long time, but when I heard it was Sinatra, I had to do it. So I wound up playing that year. Actually, the team I was on actually even won that year. So I was able to take a picture with Frank, and actually Tony Bennett was one of the performers at the event. So I have a picture standing between Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett. And I remember the press asking me in Palm Springs that day, how does it feel? I say, how does it feel? I'm in Italian heaven. I'm standing between Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett. I got to know Frank because of that, and got to be actually very close to his wife Barbara, who had a wonderful. Well, she passed away, but they still have this wonderful children's hospital out in Palm Springs, the Barbara Sinatra Children's Center. But I wound up playing in that tournament for, oh God, must have been close to 20 years, if not more.
You starred in the Rat Pack film. You played Dean Martin, and I was born in 61, Joe, so I'm just a little bit young for the Rat Pack, but boy, do I love that film. And Don Cheadle just nailed Sammy Davis Jr., and you crushed it as Dino. And I would have to think, given your fondness for music, your fondness for Italians, that was about as much fun as you've ever had doing a project.
Oh, without question. I remember, in fact, when it ended, I looked at Cheadle and Ray Liotta and the other boys, and I said, do we have to stop? Why don't we just take it on the road for 6 months? Who wants to take off the tuxedo and put down the cigarettes and the scotch? And, you know, let's go, you know, or to Jack Daniels. But anyway, it was great, great fun. And to this day, if somebody would ask me what are my five favorite characters I've played in my life, you know, Dean Martin would have been one of them. And I did a lot of research on it, and I got to be good friends with his daughter, Dina. To this day, we're very close, and it was a real thrill to do that. And I think it came out well. I think the movie was for HBO. I thought was well done, and we all had a great time doing it.
As you were preparing for it, did you find yourself like being Dean for several days, several weeks? Like you just had to become the character?
Well, you immerse yourself in it when you're doing it. I'm not a method actor like where I have to like live the part and walk around pretending I'm that guy. But I did a lot of research and I worked on it very hard because you're playing a real character. When you're playing a fictional character, it's a lot easier because people have no expectation. You're playing a real person. everybody assumes I know who that guy is. Let's see what you got. You better have a reasonable facsimile. So I really worked on his manner, the way he dressed, the way he held his cigarette, the way, and even in the way he talked. The one thing I came up with, I've mentioned this in other interviews, the voice I came up with was, as a kid, there was these Sugar Crisp commercials on TV with the sugar bear. And as I listened to Dean, to me, he sounded like the sugar bear. Ooh, you can't get enough of them Sugar Crisp. Oh, I'm the sugar bear here. So what I did, I would think of the sugar bear, and that's how I would say, hey, how do all these people get in my room? And that's where I came up with the voice for Dean Martin. I mean, so I worked on it quite a bit, and we had good hair, makeup, and all that people, and so it came off pretty well. I mean, I got nominated for an Emmy and a Golden Globe for that, and Don Cheadle won the Golden Globe for it. So it was very successful for all of us.
Was there ever a time in your career where you felt more starstruck than when you were meeting and around Frank Sinatra?
Boy, it's hard to be more starstruck than that. I've been lucky, and I've worked with obviously some of the greats. I mean, I've worked with, you know, being on the set with, you know, Al Pacino shooting my very first scene in The Godfather. I have to say that was a little, you know, it got you a little, got the juices going because of the history of the other two films prior to that. You know, I've worked with Robert Redford, worked with Ben Kingsley a couple times. But I've worked with wonderful, you know, actors, like Cher, Madonna. I mean, I've worked with a lot of icons in the business. And so you get used to that. You get used to that. So like I said, my heroes tend to be more, I get more nervous when I'm around like super athletes than I am around at super actors or actresses. But it's all good. I feel very blessed. I've worked at the best, you know, and I feel very grateful for that.
What do you remember about the first take or two that you did opposite Pacino in The Godfather 3?
Well, I actually do remember thinking, as I'm looking around, thinking, oh my God, Francis Coppola is about to say action, and I'm about to start this scene with Al and the rest of the actors in the room. And so there was that moment of like, you know, almost like you get a lump in your throat. But then I revert back to even as a sports analogy. I thought to myself, you know what? I'm playing in the big leagues now. But what should I expect? I did all the stuff leading up to it. This is what I wanted. I did the little league. I did the pony league. I did all the other stuff. And now, I went through the minors. I'm here. So it's like, you know, cook or get out of the kitchen type of thing. And so as soon as I realized that, I thought, you know what? I have a little nervousness because of the environment, but you know, they picked me, so I guess I belong. And then they say action and off you go. And so that was really kind of what it was like.
One of those movies you did with Kingsley, Searching for Bobby Fischer, the guy who put the youngster who played your son in that film just swept me off my feet. Every now and again, 9 or 10 year old actor or actress, Abigail Breslin did it a dozen or so years ago in Little Miss Sunshine, but not much happened for Max Pomerantz, I think is how you pronounce the name. Did you want to take him home with you? I mean, he was just an adorable
man. He was a great kid. Well, the thing about Max is that he wasn't an aspiring actor. Max was a chess player. And so that was the thing, you know, Steve Zalian, who wrote and directed the movie, it was very important to him to have a kid at that age who would understand the game because of the nature of the movie. So what they did is they interviewed like the 100 best 9-year-old, you know, male chess players in New York City at the time. And Max was one of them and just had to have this kind of talent for acting. And thank God he looked like he looked. Because you think about it, they had to cast him first. And so they had to build a family around him. So I think if he'd have been a blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid, I mean, I don't know if Joe Mantegna would have been playing his dad, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think once they cast Max, I think it opened it up to actors of my guys who kind of look a little like me because Max had dark hair and, you know, looked like I could be his dad. And so, but he wasn't an actor. So he did a few things after that. But what it was is I don't think Max had a real desire to be an actor, which was great. And in a way, I think, you know, held him in good stead because it gave him a real kind of freshness and a naivete when he did the part. And so, like, when they would yell cut, they'd have to send, you know, people to make sure to look for him because Mac would run off the set and go play baseball or go do whatever we would do you know, as a kid would want to do, you know, where he wasn't that, like, over, you know, joyed. Not to say he loved making the movie, but it wasn't like this wasn't the end all to his life. And so I'm not surprised that he went on to other things after that.
Joe, back when people were, you know, interacting with other people and people would see you out, what's the thing that people will come up to you the most and cite from your long storied career and say, yeah, oh my God, I you know this.
Right. You know, it really is a jump ball type of situation with that, because it could be, I'll be in an airport and somebody will yell, hey, Joey Zaza, or something like that. Or I'll be somewhere else and they'll be, hey, Fat Tony, or because of all the years on Criminal Minds, hey, David Rossi. Or if it looks like they're a bunch of stoners, they might say, hey, man, it's, you know, Jed the Fish from Airheads. Or somebody will come up to me and say, when I was a kid, all we watched was Baby's Day Out. You know, we grew up on that as little kids. Or if it's a guy, a Rat Packer type guys, you know, like yourself, you mentioned, it'll be, you know, Dean Martin. So, you know, I've been doing this for over 50 years. So there's a lot of different, you know, characters to draw upon, I suppose. But there's no one thing comes to mind. I mean, Criminal Minds gets a lot because of the longevity of it, as does Fat Tony. But you never know, you know, what the reference point's going to be. Sometimes it's even a books on tape I've done. I've done a lot of books on tape of Robert Parker, who did the Spencer books. And there are people who just, that's their form of entertainment. And they think of me as my involvement with that as much as anything else. So.
I'm much younger than my radio co-host here, so he grew up a little after the Rat Pack. I grew up on The Simpsons. I can't believe it's still going. Like, you're still Fat Tony.
Yeah,
it's kind of amazing.
I've been doing Fat Tony for almost 30 years now. I did it. It was season 3, so I mean, I came in thinking, okay, this will be fun. It looked like a cute idea, and we're going to introduce this character. And I'm sure I got chosen because the Godfather movie had just come out few months prior, and I thought it would just be this one-shot deal. Needless to say, I think I saw one of my current episodes just a few weeks ago, one of the later ones I did, and I'm still doing them, and I still love doing them. And I have a very strong fondness for Fat Tony, so I've loved doing that character all these years.
Joe, how did fathering an autistic child change your life?
Well, it's not that it changes your life. It becomes part of your life. You know, it's like sometimes I've been asked, what's it like to have an autistic child? And my answer is, I don't know what it's like not to have an autistic child. So it's a hard one to answer. It changes your life in the sense that I think you grow from that, in the sense that it makes you understand that, you know, life is a lot bigger than yourself, and that there are a lot of people who need some support, not just from yourself, but from the entire world around them, you know? And so it opens you up to that. It opens up your heart. And so, you know, don't get me wrong. There's no parent of an autistic child anywhere in the world who would honestly say, oh yeah, no, this is great. I wouldn't have it any other way. No, you know, nobody asks for that. But when you have it, you realize, look, everybody's got a story, and these are the cards. You play the cards you're dealt in your life. And my daughter, she's a wonderful human being. She's sweet. She's 32 years old, but she's also, you know, she's also 10 years old in many aspects. But she's so pure of heart. There are things you can, you know, I learned from her. You know, we watch the TV show Jeopardy every night, and she gets more answers than I do because she has savant abilities in some ways. Yet, you know, all she likes to do is go to Disneyland and see the princesses in one hand, but on the other hand, she's brilliant in other things. So, you know, these are things that, you know, being the parent, how does it change my life? I don't know how it changed it, but like I say, it is the life of my wife, my daughter, my other daughter, and my daughter Mia, and myself, and that's fine. You know what I mean? Those are the cards I've built out in my life, and I wouldn't trade them in for any others.
Joe, I know that you've been doing this for a number of years with PBS and Gary Sinise, May 24th, 7 o'clock Central, the National Memorial Day concert. If people haven't tuned into it before, what should they expect?
Well, this is going to be a special one because, obviously, for the past, this will be my 19th year doing it. Now, in the past, we would do it live from the Capitol,
We'd have a live audience of about 200,000 people showing up for this free concert on the West Lawn of the Capitol. We'd have all these wonderful acts on stage, and they would perform it live, and then they would broadcast it on PBS, and also then show reruns of it during the weekend. Obviously, due to circumstances, we had to do things differently. So Gary and I got together here in Los Angeles. We went and shot ins and outs at his office here. We had just a skeleton crew. We observed all the proper protocol for, you know, quarantine. So it was just him and I and like three crew members. And we shot all these ins and outs. And basically, it's going to be the best of. It's going to be a show of Gary and I introducing different clips from over the almost 30 years that the concert's been going on. And then some of the acts are actually doing some live, or they're going to record some live performances from their home. I think Trace Adkins is doing something from his home. I think Cynthia Erivo is also doing something from her home. And then different acts that have been pre-recorded from years past. So it's kind of be, you know, I think it'll be an interesting show, and it's also not going to just salute our military, which it always, of course, does on Memorial Day. But we're going to do a special salute to all the first responders and people who have been so invaluable during these, you know, trying times we're going through now. Even people such as, you know, people working in the supermarkets and people who are making deliveries for us and things like that. So, you know, obviously police, fire, and everybody else and medical. So it's going to be I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. It'll be the first time I'll be able to see it, you know, having pre-recorded it.
So that is May 24th, 7 o'clock Central, PBS, our guest Joe Mantegna and Gary Sinise. You should check it out, the National Memorial Day Concert on PBS. Joe, thank you so much for the time and your candor with the stories. And I also have to personally say, this is the second time you've been on my show. The last time you were in studio, it was before I was leaving for my honeymoon to Italy. And you gave me a recommendation to see your guy Sergio in Venice at the mask shop on the Rialto Bridge. I just want you to know, I mean, I didn't like need the brownie points necessarily. We got married and went to Italy, but scored some pretty cool points with the wife that I was able to drop Joe Mantegna's name and get a little discount at the mask shop in Venice. So thank you.
Excellent. No, I'll probably talk to Sergio sometime this weekend. He's still a very dear close friend, and I'm glad you had that experience.
Joe, enjoy those ribs at some point.
You got it. I'm going to go right now get them. I'm going to spread them out because in a half an hour, I'm going to turn into Bill Swirsky, and we're going to be talking about the Bears with my brother Bob and Tom Arnold and all the rest of the guys from the Superfans.
Joe Mantegna. Joe, thank you so much for the time.
My pleasure. Always great to be talking to the hometown. Take care, boys.
Thank you, Joe. Take care.
What an absolute pleasure that was.
Yeah,
man.
Joe Mantegna. Yeah, that's cool.
50 years. People just littering the text line with, oh, I know him from Baby's Day Out. I know him from Airheads. I know him from The Simpsons. Like, that's a really cool testament to an impactful career in show business.
No doubt. And his answer on the theater, exactly what I was expecting. So many actors, actresses always have regarded that live performance as a cut above anything else because of the intimacy and just right in your face. And I've enjoyed theater experiences, but I don't think it's possible that it ever those would ever leapfrog what movies mean to me. But theater, certainly for guys in the business, it's the holy grail for an actor.
Yeah, I mean that no second take, live feedback, right? That they don't necessarily get from being able to do things 20 times with the director and editing and all of that. So it's probably the most pure form of the craft, but very cool career and always very generous with his time and his anecdotes. So we appreciate Joe Mantegna from that. Tomorrow, 3 o'clock, Steve Sciarippa, Bobby Bacala from The Sopranos. I can only imagine what Tanny's Open is going to be like for tomorrow. You got it all mapped out in your head already, Tanny?
I don't yet because I want to be respectful to the man who's on a successful television show like Blue Bloods currently, but he's known for that thing. So it's like, I don't know I'm going to take it. I want to just do the best of Bobby Bacala from Sopranos. I think that's what I'll do, but, you know.
To promote a Sopranos podcast.
He is.
Talk to him about Blue Bloods.
With Blue Bloods.
I better throw out all my Blue Bloods questions then.
Yeah, get Blue Bloods out of here. What are you talking? It's okay. Like, if it's just
I think
the Sopranos
he's understanding.
Open.
Yeah, I think you're right, guys. Thanks. Good talk. See you out there.
All right, buddy. Perfect. A really fun Chicago sports anniversary today. Actually, the athlete was just referenced in our conversation with Joe Mantegna. It's next on The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Jarvis fires away. That's a fly ball. Beat the left. Back. That's it. Hey. He did it. Ernie Banks got number 500. A line drive shot into the seats and left. The ball tossed in the bullpen. Everybody on your feet. This is it. Whee! Ernie Banks off Pat Jarvis, May 12th, 1970. Second inning against the Atlanta Braves.
Just heard the date on this day many, many years ago. Man, 500th home runs for Ernie Banks. Joe Mantegna called him his hero. I know that was more Billy Williams for you, Max. Sorry to butcher that. But an iconic home run for an all-time Cub on this day.
I also loved Bernie Williams, his postseason clutch nature, Mr. Home Run in October. Yeah, but 50...
Oh, and Bernie's music career as well. Oh, what's not to love?
Fantastic.
Who can forget it? Yeah, 50 years ago today. Yes, I do remember it. Now, Banks came into the league in 55, so by 1970, Ernie had a lot of miles, and he was a great shortstop as a younger player, back-to-back MVPs in the late 50s. But he didn't have the speed anymore. He moved to first base. That's all I remember him as a first baseman. And his skills had eroded, but he still could hit the ball over the wall. And I'll never forget. We used to, you know, that would be our tradition, meaningful Cubs games. When he's sitting on 499, when you get to 2 o'clock in elementary school and the Cubs would start at 1:20, that last hour of the day when you had something important, like trying to see, you know, a Cubs player become, I think only at the time, the fifth or sixth guy to hit 500 home runs, you want to sprint home from school as soon as that bell rings. And we missed it because it happened early in the game, but they ran the replay of it all afternoon. I think Brickhouse just said second inning off of Pat Jarvis, number 33, the Braves right-hander. But just a huge day. Remember it very, very well. And it's funny when you watch the graphics of it and you see the blinking hey-hey for Brickhouse and how bad the graphics were. I mean, even stuff you see from the 80s, but this 1970, 50 years ago today, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks, going yard for the 500th time. That today puts him tied for 23rd all-time with Eddie Matthews, the great Braves slugger. I think there were only five or six guys ahead of him at the time he accomplished it when he hit 500.
An insanely cool career, obviously Mr. Cub and a beloved Cubs figure who played his entire Major League Baseball career with the Cubs. And something that I was not aware of until I went and worked in Kansas City, one of the crown jewels of Kansas City, is that's the home of the Negro Leagues Museum. And Ernie Banks did play professional baseball for another team. He played for the Kansas City Monarchs.
Yes, he did.
In the Negro Leagues. Signed at 17 years old, and then he leaves and he was drafted into the Army and is there for, I believe, 2 years, and then comes back and played for the Monarchs again. And so it's a really cool historical footnote for Ernie Banks and his career. And he was a great young player in the Negro Leagues also, and they've got some incredible memorabilia for his time with the Monarchs at that museum. And so I think it's just a piece of history that Cubs fans know is Cubs history, but that part of Ernie Banks' career is noteworthy as well. And if people are ever in Kansas City, I highly recommend going and seeing my guy Bob Kendrick at the Negro Leagues Museum, and you can learn some stuff about Ernie Banks that you might not have known.
Banks was such a colorful player late in his career and a go-to guy when you wanted quotes. And he would do the Channel 9 sports on Sunday nights. As a player, Danny, he had a little Len Dawson in him from Kansas City.
I like that.
Yeah, he hosts Channel 9 sports. We were tied with the Braves 2-2 until the fourth inning when yours truly stepped to the plate. And he'd show the highlight of his home run earlier that day. But when he came into the league in 1955, he was incredibly shy. He was a bashful kid from Dallas who grew up in a racially charged environment and was quite reserved, and he grew out of that, and he became very comfortable in his own skin, almost too comfortable, someone would say later on, and the Cubs had to back off on the number of public appearances he was making because he either was breaking commitments and not showing up, or he was having a little too much to drink. So, but nonetheless, Ernie Banks, 50 years ago today. Woo, brother! Wee! Glass tabletop time! Hey!
This segment brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Fed up with your company selling your data? Well, DuckDuckGo is on it. They can help millions of people like you take back their privacy. With one download, you can search anonymously and block creepy trackers for all for free. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. We'll talk to Hub Arkish at 4 o'clock. There was an audio of a big participant, a big character in The Last Dance. I'm wondering if you would feel the way that he did based on how he's been portrayed. It's coming up on The Score.
I try to get him to fight me a couple of times, in a good sense, you know, just to get him. Hey, man, I'm tired of you picking on me. I'm, you know, that type of mentality. Yeah, I could never get. He's such a nice guy. But I know we were going to need him at some point in time. And he's going to remember this. And he's going to get out there and he's going to fight.
Michael Jordan on Scott Burrell during The Last Dance. Thanks for hanging out. Mack and Parkins on The Score. We'll talk to Hub Arkish in 10 minutes. NFL MVP odds are out. We'll see where Hub is willing to invest some money. Probably nowhere. It's pretty. I don't think he's anti-gambling, but, you know.
He gives picks. He likes to give picks, but he doesn't gamble himself. He has said repeatedly he does not bet on pro football, but he always offers his thoughts, his best two or three moves on Bears pregame.
All right, well, then we'll see if he wants to weigh in on NFL MVP as those odds have been posted. But Mully and Haw had Scott Burrell on today, and he has been a frequent target of Michael Jordan, just a barrage of insults during The Last Dance, and Jordan snitched on him for his behavior out on the road, calling him, you know, a young Dennis Rodman and an alcoholic and couldn't be with just one woman and all that. So Scott Burrell, you would think, would maybe not love how he's being portrayed and how Jordan treated him, but not at all the case, as he told our morning show.
I love it. I mean, it's reality. It's the honesty. It's someone trying to make me better. You can never fault or be angry about a person trying to make somebody better. It's the people on Twitter who are jealous and mad.
Scott, how long did it take you to appreciate maybe what those days were like for you and what it did for you? Or did you recognize it at the time? Because I imagine there were days where it felt like, boy, this was a rough one.
I think I appreciate it more after the season. I understood what he was doing, and it weighed on you every day. But after the season's over and you win the championship and you realize, number one, you realize every day it wasn't that bad, but you realize why he was doing it. And like, I've played for some great coaches, great tough coaches, but to get pushed like that every day, it's just preparing you for life. It's preparing you what you're going to face in the future. And they've done this for 5 out of the last 7 years. 2 years in a row to win championships. So everybody else was used to it. It was just new to me.
Scott, when you think about that time period, did you ever want to, you know, take a swing at the guy? Did you ever come close to just falling off?
Well, there's many reasons why that didn't cross my mind. Number one, I enjoyed my time in Chicago. Number two, I wanted to stay in the NBA because I love my job. and three, it never got physical. I mean, trash talking is done every day, everywhere in the world. It's part of competition. But I know my limits of why would I talk junk to the man with the biggest pulpit? You know what I'm saying? You know, you're not going to win that battle. So just take it, learn from it, and live.
It's a great outlook, and I would like to think that I would have it. I'm not sure that I would, though.
Well, maybe he didn't initially, but as time has rolled along, he has the perspective of a guy who now is has got some celebrity as a result of his experience with the 98 Bulls, and because Jordan made him such a target, he can say, "Hey, kids, look at that! You know, look at Daddy in the NBA getting pushed around by Michael, but nonetheless, I was a part of that last championship the Bulls won." Yeah, it's a tough thing. I mean, you got to take it from the established leader, whether he's Michael Jordan or just a team captain who has the respect of everybody in the room, but has not won 5 titles prior to that year. When you get together, you've got to have that willingness to check your ego at the door. And certainly with a guy whose personality was as strong as Jordan's, that better have been the case. And if it got physical, maybe he would have taken that swing. Steve Kerr pushed back. What did he say? Punched him in the chest? He said he hit him in the chest. He didn't describe whether it was a punch or the double palms that you do against a guy's chest when he gets too close to your personal space. But Jordan respected him for it. And then, well, of course, he popped him in the eye afterward.
Right, right. And then called him on his car phone because he asked for the number.
Beat up the smallest guy on the team.
Yeah, it's I don't know that Scott Burrell would have been out of the league, but if you would have injured Michael Jordan by punching him because he talked trash to you, you would have been off the Bulls. So, you know, a little bit of understanding of seniority there from Scott Burrell. But I heard that and I was like, man, just a happy-go-lucky guy who really knew his place and his role, and there's something to that, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a great player in college. I come into the NBA. I'm living a nice living, a nice life, but I know I'm no Michael Jordan. So if that's how he wants to treat me, that's how he will treat me, because I am happy to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for free throw,
Hope. Sounds like he had a good time on our morning show today, too. Sounds like he was in fine spirits today.
Yeah, he probably hasn't had this much attention in 15, 20 years.
His career's been resurrected. It's out there public. See, I played in the league.
Yeah.
It was like a cornucopia of great question. Oh, great question. Great question, Mike. Great question, David. He was loving the questions today. He was in a great mood.
Really?
He's loving
did he at any
question.
Point say great questions? Just curious.
All of them were great questions. Every single question was
great
a
questions.
Great question.
Which one do you want me to answer?
Scott Burrell was thrilled to being asked any questions at any time. Coming up next, Hubbard, NFL MVP odds are out. The schedule has come out. And what is Hub hearing about what is next for the NFL? He'll tell us next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.